Howdy, folks. That's not all. We got film connoisseur JJ Bruno back as always.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Then we got Tom Belindeman.
I'm Cherokee Billy Jack.
Cherokee. You're Washington. Oh. We are talking about none other than the infamous, addicting Tom Laughlin creation for movie picture deal, Billy Jack. Another just, you know, well-intended, politically incorrect, you know, trashy fun movie, you know, part white man, part Navajo Vietnam vet who decides, hey, I'm going to go raise hell on Washington, you know, Capitol Hill. He's appeared briefly in The Born Losers, and then assembled titles such as The Trial of Billy Jack, Billy Jack Goes to Washington, which is my personal favorite, and Cry for Me, Billy, as well as the fourth unreleased movie.
I have to say that Billy Jack starts out as an American folk hero in the days of peace and love, and then he becomes kind of like a symbol for, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's kind of like he's
rebellion.
He's rebellion, but with a cause. You know, it's the idea that Tom Laughlin had, where, you know, the first movie he's a guy who's living basically, you know,
kind of like Gene Roddenberry. They got whitewashing, but it's still well intended.
Yeah.
It's just how it had to be made back then. So,
but, you know, to me, he's like this guy who basically, you know, he's like this folk hero. I mean, like the way I viewed and I've seen him, I've seen the three Billy Jack movies, The Born Losers, Billy Jack, and The Trial of Billy Jack. And I've read about Billy Jack Goes to Washington, and that becomes like, you know, it by that point, I think it'd become kind of like a parody, you know,
totally. Because, which is why it's my favorite the most.
But to me, he's this like folk hero where he's like, he doesn't use a gun, right? Only when he needs to, but he does hop Cheeto, and he's a Vietnam vet.
And on a count of three, peaceful. You drive your car in the lake.
Yeah, and he's this peaceful guy who basically, you know, doesn't like the way the American Indians are treated, because that in the second movie, Billy Jack is what we see there. You know, the basically bringing up the thing of, you know, the mistreatment of American Indians, you know, before Marlon Brando made it his pet cause.
Oh yeah.
And then the third one is basically, you know, kids trying to make, you know, trying to live their own lives, you know, out of the radar. But, you know, there's the adults of that, the establishment basically looked upon that and went, you know, hey, gun them down, even though they're having a peaceful protest, you know. And you got to realize it's like about the time of Kent State, you know.
Oh,
about
yeah.
The time of,
yeah. So some serious.
The character is almost like, I always say he's almost like John Wayne, except minus the
I'm,
you know,
a proud American. More like, I want to change everything.
He's a proud American, but he knows the rights and he knows the wrongs, and he knows that, you know, people have been killed for what they believe in.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
It really is, you know.
The premise was ripped off in a free picture deal, also coincidentally, I think, by AIP, called Iron Warrior. And it was a total Billy Jack Rambo knockoff. Just, you know,
I kind of remember.
Guy.
Was that the one with?
I think Joe Estevez was in one of them. I just find it kind of more wild because this is before Stallone repurposed Rambo and said he too is a Navajo. You know, part Navajo guy, and they're amusing too, but in a totally trashy way. And this is interesting because, like you say, you can overcome the exploitation cliches because the message is just so loud, you know.
Yeah, and JJ brings up a very good Jiggy brings a very good point about the iconography, because we're dealing with Billy Jack. He sees it more with John Wayne. I take a slightly different twist on it. I see him more as a Bruce Lee type of character, not just because of the martial arts, but also because of how Bruce Lee was portrayed in a lot of his movies. He was just mm-hmm. a guy just wanting to live by himself, he gets thrown honor. Into action, but yeah. when he gets into action, he's a badass.
It really yeah. is.
Hence the scene in Billy Jack when he's in the park and he tells the guy, "What are you going to do about it?" He says, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take this right leg of mine,
watch his feet,
put it on the left side of your face, and there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it." And he kicks the guy, and like all I remember is hearing stories about people in the movie theater, these like teenagers. Going, "Holy shit, yeah, that's what we want to," you know, because you gotta realize he's you know, the guy, he's
if you know, you weren't watching Death Wish or Taxi Driver or even freaking, like you guys say, Bruce Lee or
yeah,
even Shaft, this is what you're watching.
You know, it's like he's the guy who's there to defend the defenseless. He's like I don't say he's a Robin Hood. I mean, but kind of, but it's like he's not.
Yeah, a semi. He's basically a quarter yeah. of him. And yeah. Then, but I think you guys are both on to something. I do see a John Wayne, but minus the he's actually in on the joke versus I'm a prior old boy, you know, yeah, I do what I want, mm-hmm. you know. And the official website, yes, there's an official site, claims that the first movie was made for $360,000. And $70. Yep. So do the math however you want. And then it grossed $98 million. How the fuck do you do that?
Actually, I found out what it was. The first movie, Born Losers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is in 1967. Is budgeted for $400,000, right? Yeah. AIP is doing this. Yes. Okay. Their star power in that is not only Tom Laughlin, but also Jane Russell is in it.
Oh, yes. That's
yeah.
true.
You have William Wellman Jr. You've got, I'm trying to think, Rob Tesser, the bald-headed guy. He's in a lot of 70s movies. He played a real badass.
Yes.
But that was the thing. They were pushing this movie, because you got to realize it's 1967. The biker genre is in full effect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were movies that they made where the biker gang basically, you know, is a bunch of bad guys. And this one is where, you know, he saves this girl who is a damsel in distress, you know, from being abused. And, you know, he takes out the freaking biker gang, you know. And
it's really good staging. I know other people find that a schlocky fight scene. I think it's actually well shot. It's
oh yeah.
And the heavy handedness just adds to the charm of this movie. You know, it's like, I'll take a movie that's imperfect but well intended versus one that's callous or just flat out unpleasant.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I love the original Shaft. It's so dated.
Yeah.
And it's got some but it's
and the score alone.
It's, yeah. If you're not digging to Isaac Hayes, and I'm sorry, you're just not into this shit. but more to the point, Shaft had a lot of problematic scenes, but it was so over the top that I couldn't take it seriously. So yeah. I couldn't say, I see where the issue is, but it's
goofy.
It's more camp than actual commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. And the thing with Shaft and with, you know, Superfly and yes. all those movies is that they were showing the heroes not as, you know, right and wrong, but kind of like anti-heroes. And I think Billy Jack is an anti-hero.
But he's the cool kind of anti-hero where he doesn't try to go too far for his own good, where he has to be reprimanded. Yeah. There's no one whining or who relies on him, just people who kind of are one part of many voices. I have to give the, you know, an exploitation movie is still a movie, and I have to give credit where it's due. These movies don't, you know, there is, of course, you know, the hammy villains and the attempted rape scene and everything, but it doesn't lean into it as hard as,
no pun intended, like other
movies, which kind of want to get really nasty, kind of like a Tarantino movie, before you inevitably see someone get stylishly beat or killed. And it's like that he, and just the establishing shots of Washington, D.C., they make you remember, hey, we are, this is not a studio picture. This is not a movie that is playing, going to play it safe. It is an angry, angry movie with a purpose.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, the thing is with you know, Born Losers, that makes a ton of money. So then they say, okay, let's do another one. Let's do another movie. Let's do another film. And what they did was, they said, all right, we're gonna
surprise
the next movie.
Let's do it. Yeah.
let's do another one. And they do Billy Jack 4 years later. And from what I find out, they pulled the, this is so weird, Fox pulled out.
Yeah.
Fox pulled out, and then, well, first AIP pulled out, right?
Yeah.
And then they took and that out, and then
too, Fox pulled out,
and they said, well, we can't have that. So then they said, okay, let's get, let's bring it to Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers brings it, and it's kind of like, they're like, okay, how much can we get on it? Well, okay, it's $800,000. It does 10 million its initial run, then it does 50 million another.
This is years after Jack Warner. I'm Jack Warner.
Yeah,
I approve this.
Yeah. And it's like it's kind of weird, because the next one, it's like, it's kind of like, okay, he's away from the biker gang, because the biker, he's defending this school called the Freedom School. Nice. And this is where this is what's great. The plot itself is basically, he makes it more like a family picture, right?
Yes.
because his wife, Dolores Taylor, is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And all I remember is watching that movie and thinking to myself, okay, why are they beating the crap out of the hippies? You know, why are they beating the crap out of the hippies, man? And I got to realize it's 1971, you know, it's right after Kent State, right after, yes. After a lot of things that were going on in America at that time, you know, Nixon is president, you know, and in all honesty, you know, it's like, it's indicative of what's going on. Nobody wanted to fight back.
Yeah.
And Billy Jack is the voice of the person who says, you know what, I've had enough of this shit. I'm fighting back. I'm going to take him down a peg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got to go against the political boss. In that
and
movie,
he really,
you know,
does actually lay out his target and just go, instead of, like you say, waiting for something bad to happen again or spending more time meditating. Like, we just only see that in the open credits, and that's all we need.
Well, what gets me in that, what I like in that movie, though, is the ending, because Master Bong Soo Han, you will remember him. He was the guy who basically brought hot keto to America.
Yeah.
He helps Billy Jack take out the bad guys at the end.
Mm-hmm. It almost brings to mind stuff like Navajo Joe and some of those other ones. What's the one with the one Chinaman slave who decides to kill all these various cowboys?
Have you ever seen that one?
I think it's Karate Joe or something. It's similar to Navajo Joe. It's a different
one. Wait a minute. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of that one.
Chinese.
Oh.
Guy kills cowboys. Shanghai Joe. That's the one.
Shanghai Joe. Yeah. Jesus.
Shanghai Joe. But I feel like this is kind of in that same kind of camp where you're just like, of course they went there.
Yeah, and I just did a little bit of research on this, going back
just
to...
Just now? No, I'm just kidding.
I know, it's a shock. But I noticed that another film that's kind of in the same, kind of has the same feel to it, was Sweet Sweetback Badass Song, which is also released in 1971.
A total Melvin and Peebles trope, yeah.
Yes. And to me, that kind of connects the two, Billy Jack and Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song. But they're still drastically different, but yet they still have the same basic formula. Somebody fighting back against the man.
The underdog.
And in the end, exactly. And in the end, they both get away with it.
Right? It doesn't have to be Rocky. It can just be a simple, just movies and TV just showing just a hero who really, if more or less, just like all we need is this intense close up. We don't have to waste time getting us to like him or understand him.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that struck me is when I saw a documentary called Badass Cinema about Blaxploitation films, and one of the things that they brought out is that when they showed Sweet Sweetback in a particular theater, the people started cheering, and one of them just said, "The got away."
Wow!
And so that,
yeah,
and that was something that. Yeah, and that is something that we cannot understate, that cultural shift away from, okay, the white man is always going to be the hero, the white man's going to be able to do everything, and then they finally started to see, okay, now we have Sweet Sweetback, now we have Billy Jack. These are people who are not the typical white person, white knight type people. These are real people.
Yeah.
They're not going to follow the tropes of what Hollywood has had for the past 50, 60 years with the cowboy riding away in the sun. No. You know, Sweet Sweetback.
Homestead's attacked. Yeah.
When you were talking about Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, right?
Yep.
The thing that cracked me up was Howard Stern a long time ago was talking about that movie. And he said that one time he was in the movie, I think somebody went to go see it, and people were yelling at the screen, like, you know, "Come on, man, get away, man, come on." You know, like they were getting into it because this was it's the thing that happened with Heat of the Night when Sidney Poitier, slapped the white guy for calling him a 6-letter word. And, he just slapped him. Everybody in the movie theater went, and what was it they said? They said everybody in the movie theater that was black went, because finally, the underrepresented, the meek, the helpless, they know how to voice. Mm-hmm. And Billy Jack was a voice for the hippies, the American Indians, the downtrodden, the poor. He was everybody who wanted to go, "Hey, you know what? Fuck you. I'm through with you. I'm done with your bullshit," you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it was a long time coming, really. Had it not happened in the revolutionary 60s and 70s, it would have probably happened even more ultra violently in the 80s for on screen just themes of just protesting, you know, and then showing a controlled kind of ride in a way. It's like, okay, if you come this far, you're gonna play that game, I'm gonna kick every one of your guys' asses.
This example of that from the 80s, Red Dawn.
You go, John Malias. Yeah, if he wasn't doing some crazy stuff, then someone else was gonna come along.
Yeah, exactly. But that has sort of the same kind of protest feel, although it was more of an America rah-rah kind of thing, where we're fighting against the communists, and then later on, we're fighting against the Koreans. But it still has elements of the Sweet Sweetback and Billy Jack. It's got that element in it, but just I would say it's warped in a way to make it more pro-America than best way just simply you're fighting against oppression, as signified by the man.
Right. And I mean, overall, I mean, exploitation films have to exist, and they unfortunately are kind of restricted to, you know, Lifetime thrillers and direct-to-video or independent movies once again, but inevitably they are where you pretty much went for if you wanted to see cinema that had some social political distorted plot. This was the place to go to.
yeah
and the thing was that this movie was like, it also spawned one of the best songs I've ever heard from the 1970s, One Tin Soldier.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah. Was all it
Everybody remembers that song, even if you were a kid. You know, the message was peace on earth is all it said. You know, we're all kind of like, oh, that was the treasure, you know, not some big gold thing, you know. But the second movie was like, you know, I love when he just kicks the shit out of all those good old boys, you know, because who didn't want to do that when we were younger? You know, you get a bunch of kids bullying you, just want to, you know, just kick the crap out of them, you know, using your feet.
Not just anything, you know, your damn feet.
Your damn feet, you know. And, you know, that makes enough. I mean, the thing was, is that the story is very, very well done, right? And, very, you know, simple. At the end, he gets sent to prison because he kills the mayor's son, you know, who's raping the one chick.
Right? Which gives it a realistic angle compared to most exploitation films where the vigilante, like you guys say, rides into the sunset somehow with a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Becomes a contrarian.
It wasn't like Death it wasn't like Death Wish where he was told to leave the town and, like, you know, he shows in the airport and he goes like bang, you know.
that would be funny. Now to be fair, Charles Bronson would have actually worked here since he is like a quarter Native American, so
yeah, it would have been good.
They took the old Cherokee Nation and put us on this reservation.
Hey, don't laugh. I think he did play a couple of American Indians, but it's kind of tough when he's going, my name White Cloud. No, your name's Charles Bronson. No, I know my name is White Cloud. I'm going to take this foot, put it on the right side of your face. There's not a goddamn thing you can do about it, punk. I can't picture him doing that, you know. I dig in the tunnels. Don't, you know. My name is Paul Kersey. You know. No, Chuck, wrong movie, Chuck. Wrong movie. You're Billy.
Chuck, snap Billy, out of yeah, it. Paul Stop Kersey. Your method acting.
I'm Paul Kersey, goddammit, you know.
I'm an architect.
The third one. The third one came out in 70. Jesus, I'm thinking
77.
74.
All right.
74. And that one is kind of like, this one was like the big 3-hour one. This was going to be, you know, this is where, you know, he goes to prison, right? You know, the school was burned down, but now they're gonna start doing their thing, you know, and the school gets to get a little bit more powerful and stuff like that. And then Billy Jack is released from prison. He has to go on a vision quest and all of this stuff, right? Yeah. And then you know, the school begins to initiate its you know, its own like court of law and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, what happens is that the townspeople and the kids from the school are starting to get, they start going at it. And then one of the kids from the tribe or something like that is like being harassed in the, the town of the mayor's house or something like that, where he's tied up or something like that.
Yeah.
And Billy Jack and Bong Soo-han go in, and basically Billy Jack kicks the guy in the throat.
He really does. Watching it in slow motion, it is hard to believe that it's just a choreographed fight scene. I swear someone looks like they got their Adam's apple really in a deep hurting.
So what happens is that, you know, they have kind of their own version of Kent State, where the kids are shot, and it's four kids that are shot, you know, because he wants to bring that to the attention of the film guard. Hey, you know, the National Guard is there, you know, we'll kill four kids and we'll wound a couple of other kids. And, you know, it's like, it becomes like this kind of like this, like, parable where he's almost like Christ, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Not that he's Christ. He's not the only savior,
but that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's become the savior of where, you know, he kind of like saves people. You know, he's the savior for these kids. And there's Gene Roberts, Dolores Taylor, tells everything in a flashback. The whole movie is a flashback, basically.
Right. How did he get to be this big a guy who made a difference?
How did it go from like this to this? And like, she's going back. She's telling everything in flashbacks, which is a great idea, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I remember reading about this movie in the 50 worst films of all time book.
Yep.
Oh God.
By Harvey and Michael Medved, right?
Harvey and Michael Medved. I thought it was done when I first saw it, but I never would have thought, hey, this is unwatchable, lazy, poorly thought out. It's like, where are we going?
I don't think it's that bad. I just think Harvey and Michael Medved have all these standards, and they're like, okay, it has to be, you know, the movie's not that bad, but it's like, now it's starting to get a little bit, you know.
If it's an exploitation film or non-giant thing, mm-hmm. it must be instantly atrocious or laughable. And it's like, no, it's just, it's a B picture. There's a reason it's a B picture, not an A picture. That doesn't mean you can, you have to just flush it down the toilet mm-hmm. and act like it never existed. Because mainstream movies, the issue they fall into is they blow their load on a giant budget and then they don't do anything with it. So it's just like, you lose Black Adam. Wow, there you go. And every other superhero movie, there you go. And it's while we're on the topic of Dolores Taylor, isn't that wild how she lived longer than her husband? He lived to be 82, dies in 2013. She passes away in 2018 at 85. And I think, to your point earlier, the reason why this film is able to spend more time on the ass kicking, the shocking political commentary, and then just all the scenery is because they didn't have to worry about getting in character. They were already a couple. They already loved each other. So it was like, hey, we can display that on screen. We don't have, we just got to spend time actually getting this fucking movie done.
Well, the thing I always said is that, you know, Laughlin is kind of like a pioneer in the way he saw, you know, Hollywood becoming. Like, you know, he left Hollywood, he worked as a Montessori school for a while, you know, he wanted to do a movie about Father William Dubay, you know, and you know, he directs The Born Losers. He does Billy Jack. Yeah. He does The Trial of Billy Jack. You know, and then, you know, now he's going to go to, you know, mm-hmm. and the thing was, in 1975, he says the youth of this country has two heroes, Ralph Nader and Billy Jack. And I was like, okay, yeah, Ralph Nader, I can understand. Billy Jack?
Ralph
I think how there's somebody
how these two didn't end up in a buddy picture, I will never know.
No.
You thought the Corvair was unsafe in AU speed. Now here's Ralph Nader with Billy Jack.
And what gets me.
Don't tease gets me. Me is like, I might actually see it.
what got me was like, you know, the youth of America had more in the 60s and 70s, had people to look up to, like John Lennon, you know, you know, Avery Schreiber. No, I'm just kidding.
Now we got to wish for an alternate future where Tom Laughlin on seats Arnold Schwarzenegger
and Avery Schreiber in a movie together. I'm saying, like, you know, there was like John, you know, I mean, to put yourself in that pedestal of, like, you know, Billy Jacks, you know, with the Youth of America. I don't think the Youth of America in the 1970s was looking at Billy Jack going, hey, I want to be like Billy Jack and kick, you know, and be a, you know.
Yeah, there was too much bigotry back then. Everyone wanted to be.
You know, I'd rather be John Lennon or David Bowie or Keith Richards or, you know, somebody like that, man, you know. But it's like he did that. And then he does Billy Jack Goes to Washington, which is basically a rip on Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Oh, it really is. Yes.
Or the Happy Hooker Goes to Washington.
But there are a few shots in the frame stolen.
Oh my, it's so horrible. And I think the movie got pulled. If I can remember correctly, the movie got
pulled. It was
pulled,
the first one I saw. Like,
it was the one that they were like saying, oh my God, it's so, it was just like, ugh. Because it never saw theatrical release. It only had a limited screening. And what happened was that they were just like, about that. Because what happened was it was now his own production company put it out. You know, Taylor Laughlin Productions put it out. It was produced by Frank Capra Jr.
Yep.
Okay. And the plot is basically Billy Jack goes to the Senate. He basically he wants to change things. E.G. Marshall plays the Claude Rains. Was it the Claude Rains role?
I think so. Yeah.
Who basically is taking graft to influence the votes.
Going and from then John there's to this.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, I couldn't see Claude Rains in that role.
No.
Wasn't he already Paul Kill by that time?
Like put him upside your head, young man.
Oh, perfect. He gets to be a policeman.
But it's like there's no action in it. All it is just him. It's him basically. Just like it's like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. You know, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yep.
But he basically just does the whole Jimmy Stewart thing, filibuster at the end, and you're like, come on, Billy Jack, go kick somebody's ass. Kick somebody's head off. Do something, man. Come
Do
on,
something,
you know.
Damn it.
And it was like, oh God, it was just so bad. I mean, they pulled it. I think they pulled it out, and they were like, you know, it's just basically it was just basically a lot of talking and a lot of, like, you know, just
talking.
You know, Billy Jack trying to fight again. Billy Jack isn't going to fight this time. No, he's gonna fight with his wits and his voice. And it was just like, come on, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of walking tall, he was. Instead of walking tall, it was talking wall.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad you brought up walking tall. The walking tall is a good contrast. That was another one where, you know, it didn't really have the respect it had until many years later when they were acknowledging they were doing a TV show of it. But
with, you got Joe Don Baker in the first one, and then you got Bo Svenson in the second one.
Svenson, yeah. That his bastard's guy. Yeah.
But the thing I've said about Billy Jack Goes to Washington is, like, it was just like, okay, it's over now. You can pack up and go home. You know, that's what I feel like when I've seen parts of it. You just want to pack up and go home. That's it. You can't be Jimmy Stewart. You can't, even though Frank Capra's attached to it and it's Frank Capra Jr., you can't do this.
Yeah.
You cannot rewrite what we're for. You had a good run with four movies or three movies. This fourth one, you kind of went, you know.
Oh man,
and I've never heard of a movie being pulled, even before it's screened nationally,
other than
where they just
the latest DC Comics one. So yeah, Thanks oh, for God. Yeah. predicting the future of Warner Brothers, Billy Jack.
Well, they're saying now, to get off the subject, the Flash movie may be the thing yep. they've wanted to do.
I saw that the other day, and I was like, yeah, I can live with that. They know it's not going to make money when your star is misbehaving. It's one thing if they slapped someone on the ass or had a joke that went too far, but when you're just like, everyone just fucking hates you because you're literally just pulling an early Marky Mark, just randomly going around and beating people up, it's like, yeah, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
No one's putting money in your pocket.
But I think the thing everybody wants to see is Michael Keaton as Batman one more time. That's
just it, too. It's like, they don't care about the movie. They care about, well, I mean, this looks fine. It's like, well, it might look fine. It doesn't mean it's good.
Because when I heard him say, you want to get crazy? We'll get crazy. I just went, my little 14-year-old heart went, oh, thank you, God. You know, because to me, I mean, everybody says it's Adam West, and I got to give it to Adam West, you know, but to me, you know, Michael Keaton, those first two movies was unbelievable. And I mean, nothing to take away from Bale or anything like that, but you know. But the thing I got to say is the Billy Jack movies, he was going to do one more.
He totally was. Yeah. In the 80s,
Tom Laughlin. And I think what happened was that it was never completed.
Yeah.
Because from what I understand, Laughlin got hit in the head with a bottle that didn't break. And then he was going to sell it to a major studio, and there's only 15 minutes of the motion picture that had been filmed. That's it. There was nothing else there. It had Dolores Taylor in it again.
Blu-ray now.
You know, it was supposed to be Billy Jack like breaking up a child porn ring. Oof. From what I understand, the plot was supposed to be. Yeah. I think it was something that Laughlin wanted to just, you know. That was kind of like him going, hey, you know what, let's show, you know, what we need to do here. Maybe, you know, what's going on in America.
Maybe one of the producers was a pedophile. I don't know. That's the only reason why I can think
well,
of
yeah, way. You know.
And here's how we salvage it. Here's how we salvage it. We have Billy Jack meets Godzilla.
I mean, it's kind of like how, you know, as much as I respect Roger Corman, it always was fucked up to me how half the time he would do a movie that was well intended, and the funders and the fundraisers in like Wall Street or Japan were like, hey, we don't care what it is, we just need nudity. And usually the only time they would incorporate nudity was during a rape scene. It was like, well,
yeah, fuck?
Are people actually jerking off to this? That's fucked up. Jeez.
Well, here's the funny thing about Laughlin with Billy Jack Goes to Washington. He goes to show it, right? Right. At a private screening, Senator Vance Harkey was not reelected in 1976, got up because it was about how the Senate had been bought up by the nuclear industry. He got up and charged me. Walter Cronkite's daughter was there, and Lucille Ball, because Lucy Arnaz was in the picture. And he said, you'll never get this release. This house you have, everything will be destroyed. Okay?
Wow.
And then... yeah, and then he told People Magazine Times 3 years from today we'll be the new United Artists. Either that, we'll be out on our butt on the street. 76, he announced he was $7 million in debt, paying financial troubles, unethical behavior of. So basically, Warner Brothers screwed him over. Okay,
bet.
And then, then there's supposedly he kind of like. It was kind of like weird because he kind of went a little bit off the wall. Of course, you guys know there was a wrestler named Billy Jack Haynes.
Yes.
Right. And and remember he'd come in with the Billy Jack hat on. Okay. Mm-hmm. He'd come in with the Billy Jack hat on. Now Billy Jack mm-hmm. Haynes is a looks like, you know, he did too much meth in one sitting. But He announced he was going to do another movie, Laughlin, saying Billy Jack's crusade to end the war in Iraq and restore America to its moral purpose. And it was supposed to be Billy Jack's Moral Revolution, which sounds like a video game.
It really does.
Then he goes, Billy Jack, Then he goes Billy Jack, and then he goes Billy Jack for president, Billy Jack and Gene. Okay, and a debate would take place between Billy Jack and President George W. Bush for I mean, he did get the rights back to Billy Jack, but he basically, I think he just went a little bit off the wall. He ran for president.
Yep. He kept switching parties, and then he finally ran as an independent, saying, "I don't answer to anybody," and they still weren't buying what he was selling, and he was getting even more pissed off. And I think that's where he lost him. He was so out of control. Nobody could tell him no, but at the same time, it was just, who else was going to do it? He didn't want to sit around and watch the news on TV and get angry. He wanted to actually do something.
You know, I mean, I remember watching him on TV one time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the movies and stuff, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm going to run for president." And they just kind of went, "Oh, that's nice, you know. Oh, gee, you know." And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, "Tom's a little long in the tooth to play Billy Jack nowadays." You know, he didn't look like Billy Jack. He kind of looked like, you know, Billy Jack's uncle at the barbecue who had a little too much beer. You know, didn't know when to stop eating the kielbasa at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know. And I felt bad because, you know, him and his wife, they got the rights back. You know, they were making the money back off of, you know, those. I think they did sue Warner Brothers and did win. But the thing was, you know, there's these four movies. Well, you know, three movies, actually, that are really part of a culture that, you know, it was a movement that was dying, that was not dying just yet, but it was like the last, to me, Billy Jack is like, you know, love, peace, flowers, that was great, but sometimes you got to kick some ass to get your point across.
I mean,
BLM
has represented a lot of that, but we're even further with that now. I think we're now to the point where it's like, you know, once you cross into the whole, I have no double standard, you don't get the right to complain when we finally rebel against you and we kick your ass. You know, it's just like, we're having to remind people.
And that's the scary thing in our country right now.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the scary thing in our country. I hate to say it. You know,
I do too. I thought it was going to be cheesy and just continual, just, you know, pissing matches. But now it's to the point where people really are down to fight and have someone literally just shoot someone they disagree with no repercussions.
It's not just within a certain group either, or a certain ideology. It's all over the place. And I'm sitting here as an older person who can say, you know what, I don't subscribe to the violence. You can make your point, but once you cross that line into violence, you can't step back.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be full bore into it. And a lot of people are starting to say, you know what, I accept your terms.
Totally. You got to remind everybody, hey, I see what you're doing. And this childish thing is going to get, you know, no reaction from me. I know what you're trying to do. But I get that it's easier said than done, because just like any bully, it's so easy to react to them and let them bother you.
Yeah. But I think the thing was that if you watch the trial of Billy Jack, there's one point.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's going to listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga. Right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Where some of the kids want to fight back with guns and knives and stuff, and they're like, no, we can't do that because we'd be sinking to their level. And I mean, the thing is that that's where you begin to see the ideology split in the whole hippie community, where it was the ones that decried peace, love, let's try to get everything done. And then you had the other side, which was, I'm not going to say Abby Hoffman and all that, but let's say the Yippies, the Black Panthers, the Weathermen, all those guys who were basically saying, look, we got to fight now. We got to fight. And if we don't fight back, we're going to get getting shit on. All right. There was no middle term here. And that was the thing that really.
Yeah. I'm going to take it back a little bit further. I'd say that was sort of a representation of the split between MLK and Malcolm X.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where MLK was for civil disobedience, where Malcolm X was like, we're not going to take this shit anymore.
And you think
Malcolm mellowed out in the last year and a half, but he was scary. I mean, that's the thing. He was scary. He scared a lot of people. Abby Hoffman scared a lot of people. Abby Hoffman, Bob, the Chicago 8, they scared a lot of people because they were the counterculture in the living room going, hey, you know what? Let's get drunk. We'll drop acid in the Chicago River. We'll get naked. We'll screw, and that's the thing. I mean, it was, Laughlin, I think, and Dolores Taylor, his wife, were basically writing about saying, okay, look, this is what's going on here. We're going to show you what it is. There's the peaceful kids that want to.
We must discuss not, this.
That must have an open discourse. And then there are the kids that are against those that are putting him down by fighting back, by getting a gun, by blowing up something, by setting something on fire, just to piss off the people that are in charge. You can sit down and have a sit in and do all this shit, or you can go get some, go be violent and tell them, we're not going to take it from you. Fuck you. Get out of our face. Mm-hmm. There's, oh, no, I'm sorry.
I can only hope this continues. We have more sit downs and we remind everybody, hey, we're actually paying attention to each other and we got to come to some kind of, discussion.
Keep
raising our fists and getting angry and letting some of the other crazies join in on it who didn't even want anything to do with it. They just wanted to use us as a shooting ground. I mean, we got to do so much, like you say, just repairing. And if these, I mean, I've said it to my sister several times, each time we watch a fun procedural, is like, pretty sad that we gotta need a work of fiction to remind everybody and that they need to care about their society they live in.
Yeah, yeah. Not to pat ourselves in the back here. I think this little confab that we have going on isn't a good example of being able to sit down and talk about things. JJ, he's more socially liberal than I am, but you know what? I still get along with him because we don't focus on the stuff we disagree with. We focus on the stuff that we're passionate about, totally. And that comes in films and all of that. So you know what? I have no issue with being able to sit down with somebody I disagree with and just like talking things over coffee.
Yeah, I mean,
and easier said than done, though. I mean, we got so many who want to kill us.
The thing with me and Tom is that, you know, Grace, we'll have our disagreements, but we'll say, okay, no, this is why I don't agree with you on it, and this is why I don't agree. But you know, we don't go backbiting each other. You know, this is the thing Billy Jack brought up, and this is the one thing. If you talk, there's one part where they're talking to this group of people that are checking in on the Freedom School, and they're these adults, and they're like, we don't see any problems here. What's the problem here? And you know, they're like, well, they're teaching the kids how to do this. And like the adults are going like, no, this is a school that's teaching kids how to, you know, do things a certain way. And you know, and I think the thing was that it brought out that paranoia.
Yes.
That mom and dad who were raised in the 30s, who now had kids of their own, who were now becoming more socially aware, more
laid back,
open with their minds, more open with their minds, you know, chemically, spiritually, whatever, you know, they were beginning, you know, everybody portrays the '60s as, you know, peace, love, flowers. No, it was people saying, look around what's going around you. Look on what's going around you. Okay. Things are changing. We've already lost. We've lost, you know, you lose three people in that decade that were meant to change, four actually, you know. You lose JFK in 63. You lose Malcolm X in 65. You lose, you know, Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King in 68. You know, you have the Chicago riots. You have the Democratic riots in 68. You've got the Watts riots in 67. You know, you've got the three guys who were in Mississippi, the civil rights guys that got killed by the Klan. You know, you have the society was changing, the structures were changing, the norms were changing, and Billy Jack was showing that. Billy Jack was showing that the people that were in charge, the people that had this way of saying everything goes just as planned, everything we have is going, and then the kids are just coming up going no. Taking pins and going, no. This is what we're going to be doing here. You're going against, you know, civil rights. You're going against human rights. You're basically belittling the people that were indigenous to this country because they don't look like you. You know, it's this whole thing. It's this whole movie that opens up a dialogue and makes you think. And then the last movie, it just kind of loses you, you know. I think it's 1977. We're two or three years
weren't involved with him. They were just buying his movie, you know.
Well, you got to think too. Like that's about a year or two before the China Syndrome. The last
Billy Jack at least. Movie. Yeah, it where, has to be.
where it brings up about nuclear power, you know, which is something I'm still scared about to this day. God forbid something were to happen.
Oh yeah, with Kim Jong Un, I was worried there for a while.
Well, with Kim Jong Un, I wasn't worried about him. I was just worried about him going, you know, one day waking up going, okay, I bombed somebody, you know. but I mean, you know, the whole nuclear industry, you know, nuclear power, because you know, it was people were still looking for alternative forms of energy back in the '70s. You know, solar power, wind power, water power. And nuclear energy was this thing that was like, ooh, and Laughlin saw that as the big evil, you know, and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to show that the Congress and the Senate had it in their pockets, you know, that they were bought up by the nuclear energy. And, you know, we don't know about that. you know, he's just making a conjecture about it, saying, you know, they've all been bought out. You know, everybody you see gets bought out by a lobby. You know, and that was the thing. He became more political in the last movie, and he lost a lot of people in that movie.
And truth be told, it was going to happen eventually anyway, yet you always end up overstaying your welcome as an activist, but the whole overall idea that everyone forgets about is to just start the show and then see where it goes, you know, or people listen to you, or you're stating it very well.
I think the activism part of him was getting more into the line than the actor part of him, you know?
Oh, definitely.
It wasn't. And that kicked the ground out from underneath him, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, that really kicked the ground out from him, you know, to say, you know, go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry.
And it's almost like to be thinking about it now, it's almost like he was the progenitor of what we're seeing now with a lot of passion causes and being involved with the entertainment industry. I wouldn't say he necessarily kicked it off, but he was certainly somebody who was ahead of his time in that regard. Something like an Inconvenient Truth if somebody like if Tom didn't do what he did. It was just a matter of the environment needed to be right, if you'll pardon the bad pun.
And it needed to be shown what was going on in the world. Nobody's shown anything like that. I mean, you know, plus it's the mid-1970s, you know. So we're getting out of Nixon. We're getting out of All the President's Men, 3 Days of the Condor, you know, The Parallax View, you know, all those movies that are kind of like what's going on behind closed doors. And this is Billy Jack saying, I'm going to show you what happens behind closed doors. I'm going to show you who the Wheeler dealers are. And he kind of lost it. You know, he lost it at that point for me, you know. So
but it was inevitable. That was the sad. It's kind of like a good, smart comedian eventually makes a dumb move.
You know, like Dane Cook.
Was he a rude thing? Objection, Your Honor. Objection, Your Honor. Dane Cook is not a comedian.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
He's a what?
He's not a comedian.
He's not a comedian.
Oh. Well, you know, I did see Dane Cook a couple weeks ago. He was at a restaurant parking a car. But, you know.
Oh. But, hey, we're all having this amusing, you know, chat. And people in this world are still just besides themselves. They don't know how to state what's on their mind without just abusing their privilege or overstaying their welcome. It seems like anytime there's a congressional discussion, all it takes is just one dickhead to really just kill the mood in the room, and everyone just stops trying. They just elongate it until they just get tired, and it's like no, stay the course, do it or don't, you know, stop wasting everyone's time.
I think Tom Laughlin was good for what he did, you know, at that time, but you know, he kind of ran the course, you know, and I think a lot of people start to realize that, you know, with him, you know, he made those 3 great movies, like I said, and then the 4th one, he just was like, you know, people, I think he just ran out of steam.
He didn't and plus, you know, anyone else's help. Plenty of other B-movie guys wanted to do important movie. Corman wanted at one point to make a big activism movies on Africans being segregated and everything, and he just never made it, you know. It's just the money wasn't there, and I think a lot of people get discouraged just when, truth be told, so many of our other great filmmakers have been able to just insert various social commentary in anything, whether it's a war or historical drama or a typical action or horror movie, and it's like use that more, please. Instead of just
it's almost like people didn't pay attention to Gene Roddenberry or George Romero. It was just
sexy people in space and gory and
they didn't catch the underlying message.
They were too busy being to be scared, not to realize the morale of the story.
That's the thing that gets with like the Rod Serlings, the Gene Roddenberrys, you know, the guys that really were making television and looking at television and saying, okay, this I can get my message across by doing, mm-hmm. you know, and then mm-hmm. you had guys you got someone like Romero who does one of the greatest horror movies of the 1960s, and he breaks the ground by having a black guy as his main lead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No one's.
And you don't have to spend time on dialogue, you know, on exposition to get his point across. Is like, you know, instantly, this army and these cops, they're also in a way the villains because they're sloppy. They're not helping. And when they come in to help, they kill the hero. And it's like, well, what the hell?
Yeah.
Just because
you take it. And then you take another example from television, Norman Lear.
Would get angry every time he saw a Archie Bunker for President sticker on someone's car, and he's I've done more harm than good because some idiot doesn't understand my program.
Go ahead.
There was a movie that came out in 1970 called Joe. If anybody's ever seen the movie Joe with Peter Boyle, okay, that was a movie that came out, and it was. Basically, Peter Boyle, who was, you know, personally was a liberal left wing, you know, guy playing this hard hat Nixon silent majority character who basically just want to bust heads and, you know, friggin' find the hippies and all and, you know, take them out mm-hmm. because he doesn't like the way they look. You know, that to me was scary. That to me was a scary mm-hmm. movie to watch. It's funny, but it's scary, you know, how mm-hmm. this was really going on in our world.
Yeah, and I'll take it a step further. There are a couple of movies that came out more recently that have delved into that. One of them was being Red State by Kevin Smith.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Very underrated. Mm-hmm. And the other one, was called The Hunt.
Yes, that and Ready or Not. And again, good contrast to Joe and some of these others, and all of them, the villains are all these elites.
Yeah, and
have all the money in the world. They could easily move away if they don't like someone, but they decide instead, I gotta be the bigger dick.
Yeah, and to a lesser extent, even The Purge kind of touched on these kind of things too. Yes. The first one, brilliant. After that, it is hit or miss, but the best parts of like The Purge, Red State, and all that movies like that are some of it is in your face kind of stuff. This is what the director believes. This is what the story wants you to believe.
Well, but it's we'll always also need something like that.
Yeah, but there's also the undercurrent of it, the message behind the message. Yeah, it's up front, but there's also something that's behind it that is a lot more cerebral. Kevin Smith did that with Dogma, I felt because I had people, I was watching in a theater, and as people were walking in, I said, this was a dumb movie. And it's like, and it was so blasphemous. It's like, it's not really. It's the message behind the message you have to watch for.
They're looking at the jokes as opposed to the punchline. It's like, well, what the hell?
Yeah. And, yeah, but the
there's
point
one part still, of Dogma you talked about, right? There's one part in Dogma I love is when Chris Rock is talking to what's her name? Who's the woman in that movie? Linda Fiorentino?
Yes. Oh my God. I miss her.
And anyway. she asks him, she says, what was he like? You know, Jesus. And she says, he liked to listen to everybody. You know, we'd all sit around and just talk, and he'd just sit there and listen to everybody. And I mean, it was like this part where I hear it now in my head. I'm like, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Dogma, you know, I remember seeing Dogma going, okay, I'm laughing at this because of me being raised Catholic, you know, with all the guilt and shit brought into my life. And then Kevin Smith going, well, here, let me pull this rug out from underneath you. Bring, look what we have here. Look at all this shit that he brought Christian Catholic mythology into the movie, where people were going, it's not blasphemous. That's really what happens.
Go ahead.
God comes back as a woman, and that's the biggest, yeah. God's a woman, you know?
Yeah, and the best part of trying to think of what I was going to say, and by pulling the rug out, he's actually making a very good point about the big fake religion, like the buddy Christ versus the real down and dirty stuff, that these are flawed humans. They're following what they believe to be right. And it's imperfect, but it's still a lot better than just being giving in like the two angels did.
Yes. Yeah. And we're laughing at what an absurd fight they're having, and that's determining the fate of mankind. So it's just, you really got to take all this kind of stuff in, but so many won't, just because if they, for whatever reason, have to use their brain, they're just not crazy about it.
They just want to be entertained for 2+ hours watching CGI and one-dimensional characters doing things that we wish we could do, instead of taking the time to sit down and really think about a subject matter. And that's one of the beautiful things about the Billy Jack, at least the first three in the Billy Jack series. And I've been meaning to say this, but now, if you really think about it, the Trial of Billy Jack is such a perfect title because it has so many layers to it. We have him from prison. Yes. We have the tribunals being set up. We have this. We have the vision quest. He's going through so many trials, so that it becomes not just the trial singular, but the trials plural, and it works on so many different levels.
It's like an onion. You're peeling the onion back, and you're seeing all the layers, and everything connects together. It's like, and then at the end of that movie, they bring up the My Lai Massacre, which is something, if you read in your history books, a bunch of soldiers got pissed and basically gunned down an entire village of Vietnamese people. Mm-hmm. And General Westmoreland, the order to do that,
And every year we got someone denying that there were war crimes and calling other people, so to speak, ignorant fascists, and they call anyone else who disagrees with them a fascist, is like, listen to yourself. This is not how this works.
Exactly. You become the very thing that you're trying to prevent, unless you take that time to think.
One extra minute to think will spare you all this embarrassment.
Yeah.
But easier said than done. Maybe they don't want anyone to listen. Exactly. Maybe they just want to make a violent point, which ultimately is just them. The problem is, I think all of us have way too much testosterone in general. And so when we see so many people who come off as toxic or cynical, it's just like, well, there's a limit. But if you're angry enough or just so blinded by rage, then everyone will waste their breath on you. But I feel like we get even more caught up in, we don't know when anyone is actually listening versus when we're getting trolled and the message is just becoming preachy now, and we got to rephrase it, find a different crowd to spread the message you want to spread. But spread it like a virus, but just non-lethally. You really, really want to get that message out. But you want to make sure to just back off when someone's just really just wasting your time. If you're at a event and you're getting a dickhead in the audience who's just interrupting at every turn, you can either approach them and say, "Hey, man, why are you here?" Or you can just keep ignoring them and just be the bigger man. If he completely destroys your set, then you got to just say, "Okay, guys, last chance. Who here actually gives a shit?" So all eyes on me, look at me, not him.
And I think that's one of the reasons why my generation X is going to be ultimate winners, for lack of a better term, because we have perfected the art of apathy.
Yes.
We perfected the art of apathy. We perfected the art of who gives a shit, man. You know, that's our thing.
Exactly.
And if you did, and my generation is going to look and go, why did we say all that stuff? And it's like, well, because you didn't care. You know, you didn't, you were too busy Googling over Beverly Hills 90210 than to care about what was going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And there's the people like me that, and then there's the people like me who basically were looking around going, you see what's going on here? You see what's wrong here? No, man, I don't. Why? Because I don't care, man. I'm going to be a 90s douchebag. Okay.
Not just any douche, a 90s douche.
A 90s douchebag.
The 90s douchebag. How do you tell he's a 90s douchebag? Well, he's wearing a wool hat and it's 90 degrees outside. And
if it was he's the 80s, got a he'd jacket cool from hair. If it was the 70s, yeah, he'd be wiping his crotch while mowing the lawn. You know?
Yeah, he's being a nonconformist just like everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's wearing the corduroys and the Van sneakers and the t-shirt with the tied symbol on it. And then he's got a jacket from a freaking gas station he never worked at that he picked up at Salvation Army.
There you go. He's soliciting.
He's got the wallet with the chain. You know, he's got the clove cigarettes and he only drinks like, you know, a certain beer because to him that beer is the best beer in the world. And all the music you like sucks because his music's better. And he has, mm-hmm, and he thinks everything that you like sucks. That's the only thing he says. Yeah, I like the Birds. They suck, man. Hey, I like, I like Graham Parsons. He sucks, man. Do you know who I'm talking about? No, man, but they suck. The only stuff I listen to is, and he rushes some obscure band that only him and three of his friends like. And when they see that band in a concert somewhere,
a Kentucky rap band. I don't know.
Yeah. No. I will give you guys. I will give you guys something that really got to me. Right, the Warped Tour. Do you remember the Warped Tour?
I do.
Vans Warped Tour. Okay. Yeah. 1 year, NoFX was playing. Right. So it was NoFX, mm-hmm, Rocket from the Crypt, Fishbone, The Figs. I forgot who else was on it. Right. So. My friends and I go to the Warped Tour, and I'm bored out of my mind. You know, my best friend left with his girlfriend. They're going to her beach house, you know, like maybe about, you know, down the road a little ways. I'm like, okay, you guys go. I'm stuck there. It's hot as hell. You know, I'm feeling Altamont is going to break out any minute. All right. Except the Hell's Angels aren't going to be there. It's going to be a bunch of kids with like Vans hitting each other upside the head, just whacking each other with Vans sneakers, you know?
Yes.
Like Fishbone plays. There's only five people in their audience. I'm watching them. I'm amazed by them, right? I see the Figs. They're amazing. It's 6 o'clock. I want to go home. My buddy's like, dude, I said, dude, I gotta go home. I got work in the morning.
Famous last words.
No, man. I wanna see NoFX. I'm like, who? NoFX, man. So I'm like, dude, I want to go home, man. You guys, you know, I'm going to go home. I want to go home. I was bored. So all the time on the way home, my friend, I will not say his name, and my other friend, who I will not say his name, are just ragging on me, And I said, you know what, man? How about I just drop your asses off here on the side of the Garden State Parkway? You can call a cab home.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just acting like two babies. You're two fucking babies. You're 21 years old. You're acting like you don't give a shit about anything. You know what, Bruno, man? You just not punk enough. I'm like, fuck you, pal. You know? I was like, shit, you know.
Yeah, that was not punk. That was an abomination of punk. I know punk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I lived when punk was king.
Oh man!
Yeah, Ramones, The Clash, the Jam, the freaking Sex Pistols, Blondie, Television, all that. Yeah, that was punk. You try to tell these kids punk today, they're like,
someone with the spiked hair, right? No.
Yeah. No.
Why did you think that?
No.
Not at all.
Yeah. So, Oh, what a day we had.
What a day, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
What do you guys got coming up?
I'm going to be writing soon on my webpage about The Million Eyes of Sumeru.
Nice.
Which we just covered on Mystery Science Theater, and its sequel, The Girls from Brazil.
Yes.
Which nobody knows about. And also,
which was covered, covered by Riff Tracks.
Riff Tracks, yeah. And then there's I'm going to go further into the second part of the Lindsay Anderson Mick Travis movie, Oh Lucky Man, which I think is probably one of the best movies I saw, you know, even though my friend Steve debates and I'm like, no, it's Oh Lucky Man, I think, because it's amazing to watch. And also I'm going to do a thing about Invasion of the Eye Creatures.
Nice. Ooh. Classic monster.
Which is Larry Buchanan. Who the hell did that? The guy who directed it. Basically, all I'm going to talk about is how bad the movie is. The movie basically was... The movie starred, of all people, John Astley. Now, if you know who don't know who John Astley is, if you have seen Beyond Atlantis, he's in Beyond Atlantis. He was a pretty boy in a lot of the AIP Beach Picture movies with Frankie Avalon. He did this movie, I think, for $5 and a cup of coffee. Invasion of the Eye Creep. It's so terrible to watch. I don't know where it was.
Yeah, but the question I have is if he would give you up, let you down, run around, and desert you.
No. I don't think he'd do that. He'd never make me cry. Never want to turn around and hurt
your tail on. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you get Rickrolled on a film podcast.
Also, there's a show you guys have to watch called The Armstrong and Miller Show, British comedy show.
There you go. Nice.
It's on Tubi, and it's on Pluto. They play it early in the morning on Pluto.
That's neat.
And it's a funny show to watch. I love watching it. It's just fun to watch. So,
yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
Get some of those deep cuts, those underrated material.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm going to try to sit down in the near future and watch. I just picked up a Blu-ray 3-pack of 3 of my favorite comic book, non-comic book movies. Constantine, the director's cut of Watchmen, and V for Vendetta.
There you go.
Nice.
Yep.
And it cost me a little over $5, which is just astounding to me. The quality of V for Vendetta alone is worth more than $5. But beyond that, I'm just keeping an eye out for things that are interesting. Tubi is a godsend when it comes to finding those obscure little movies and just fun little adventures. I saw a movie from the 70s called The Boob Tube that
oh god, I love that movie.
I love that movie too, and not for the reasons you think. But I can see it as a progenitor of movies like Airplane and Kentucky Fried Movie and also and just a bunch of other
on the projects. Moon.
Yes.
Amazon Women on the Moon. And there's another movie you have to watch called Tunnel Vision.
Yes.
In that same era of like spoofing. The Boob Tube I love because Richard Belzer in it, he plays the president.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And years before he even played the president and other stuff. Yep. I missed that brilliant dude.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.